You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is a show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about truck, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm Kevin Rutherford, and we have got a great show lined up for you today. This is a special edition of the Audio Road podcast, Ask Larry Anything, with my special guest, Larry Wingett. I'm going to bring Larry on in just a minute, but I want to get you ready for the questions. If you haven't seen Larry's original YouTube series, Ask Larry Anything, you can ask him anything. I mean, money, finance, debt, success, family, relationships, business, growing a pair, you name it, ask Larry anything. And Lisa will start screening calls right now. I will tell you, we are not taking the normal trucking calls. This is all about asking Larry. So without any further ado, Larry Wingett, welcome to the program.
Hey, I appreciate you having me.
Great to have you back. Hey, before we get to the questions, can we just catch up a little?
Sure.
Because I know you've been doing a lot of stuff. And for everybody listening, grab something to write with because you're going to want to know where to find this stuff. So the book, Grow a Pair, your latest book, seems like it's doing great.
You know, it immediately went to the top of the New York Times bestseller list, as well as the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. It's been selling great ever since then. It seems that people are really responding. I think they respond most of all to the title because, I mean, darn, that's a good title. So they like the Grow a Pair, and then I was on Dr. Phil, and he promoted it pretty heavily. And so the book has gotten a lot of publicity and is just doing great.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, I'm on the road again doing some traveling, and I absolutely love technology. Do you read on an electronic device at all?
Kindle? I do. I read on a Kindle, yep.
Okay, so I've got a Kindle Paperwhite that I absolutely love. But what's even better when I travel is when I buy a book now, I buy the Kindle edition, and for a couple dollars more, I get the Audible edition. And
yep.
Technology, I don't even know how they managed to do this, but last night I was reading on my Kindle, and I turned it off and went to bed, got up early this morning, got in the truck, plugged in my iPhone, started the book, and it picks up on the audiobook where I left off on the Kindle.
Isn't that amazing?
That is,
and you can go from one device to the next, and it keeps track. I just think it's incredible, too.
It's way smarter than I am because I can't keep up with all that. I can't remember which book I was reading last, much less what page I was on. All right, so the book's doing great. Your new virtual training series, tell us about that.
Well, I have a virtual training series that covers... It's about 12 hours worth of information, I think. I do 12 different topics. It's all areas of both life and business, from parenting to money to problem solving to dealing with life's questions and issues to how to set goals and achieve them. I move over into the business side, and I do a lot with money, too. I have an entire money section about how to budget and how to spend and how to get control of your money and your mind right about your money. Then in business, I do a couple of sessions on leadership and about selling and great customer service and those kind of things. And so it's anybody that has a job, it's perfect for. Anybody that has a life, it's perfect for. It's really been received well. It's a virtual training, so you get to do it at your own pace. It's like personal one-on-one training with me. And you're asked questions along the way to sort of prompt you through it and direct you based on how you're doing. It'll kind of force you to pay attention, these little quizzes that are filtered in there. So, and people are just loving it.
So I can't imagine what it would cost if in real life I could just pick up the phone and call Larry Wingett in 12 hours worth of you helping me with stuff. That would have to be outrageously expensive. So what's the cost of the virtual training?
Well, if you spent that same amount of time with me, it would run you a lot of money, tens and tens of thousands of dollars. If you do it online, virtual training, it's $17 a month. And there's no obligation. I mean, you invest $17, and if you do it for a month and you hate it, just drop out. So the most anybody has to risk or gamble is $17.
What a great deal. That's one of those things we call on this show a no-brainer. You just have to go try it.
And all you have to do is go to Larry Winget, LarryWinget, virtual training. That's the website. Or you can just go to LarryWinget.com. It's the first thing on my front page there. And it is kind of a no-brainer. I mean, again, if you'd really got in a hurry, you could do it all in the first month.
Yeah, that's right. You'd get the whole thing for $17. That's crazy.
Yep. Well, that's what I was told. They wanted me to price it. There are people who do the same thing with the same company. It's that built the system for me, and they're selling theirs for $5.99 a month. One guy's selling his for $4,000 a month, and he doesn't have any more material than I do. And but I just thought I would make it so affordable for everybody. I became the Walmart on this deal instead of Neiman Marcus. I'd rather everybody have a shot at buying this and not let money be an excuse or something that would stand in their way.
Well, you know, that alone is pretty amazing because, you know, a lot of people here know as a speaker, you've been demanding pretty high dollar for a long time because you're in demand. And you don't really do, you know, kind of open events very often. It's usually a company. So for a lot of people, they haven't had a chance to see your material other than a book. So for $17 a month, what a deal.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. Well, most people do consider it a real deal, and it's material I'm really proud of. I really poured a lot of heart and soul into these hours worth of information there, and it's as I said, it's really been received well by folks, and I did design it so anybody could benefit from it. You don't have to be a CEO, but if you are, there's something in there for you. You could be a janitor and learn a lot about business and how to do your job better. It's about living a better life and being a better employer and a better employee and all of those things.
Great stuff. Hey, one more thing. Didn't you just do a pretty big event in Atlanta?
I did. Did a couple of big events in Atlanta. You attended one similar to it last year in Phoenix, and we did another one this year, and it was a great event.
Well, and I got to let everybody know, I attended last year in Phoenix, absolutely loved it, and it was the turning point for me. I've been saying for years I've got to write a book. I've got so much material, and writing is really hard for me, but you did such a great job of explaining the book writing process, and you had a you know, the process and the questions and how to get started, and it was the first time I ever thought about writing a book and looked at it and said, well, if that's how you do it, I can do that. And I followed your process, and I did. I got a book done, and so very happy. I'm in the middle of my second one right now.
Well, good.
So
you
ought
to be
so
proud.
Yeah, that event was definitely a turning point for me.
Well, cool. That's great to hear. You know, I love doing those events where people can come in and people who want to write a book or want to go into the speaking industry or build a brand around who they are or whatever or build a big social media following. And the nice thing about that event, and I'm pretty sure it's the only event like it anywhere, is that it is absolute transparency. Suzanne Evans, who is the other person, we both tell you exactly what we do to run our business and how we do what we do. We don't hold anything back. And I don't know of anybody who's doing that.
Well, I don't know where else you can find that. I mean, where else you can go and sit down and have two very successful people tell you exactly how to do it.
Well, there are a lot of people selling the information. It's interesting, though, what I find in the industry is there are a lot of people saying, let me tell you how to write a book. that will become a bestseller when they haven't written a best-selling book. You know, I've written 6 New York Times, Wall Street Journal bestsellers, so I kind of have the right to stand on a stage and say this is how you write a book. But there are people out there selling that training for, I mean, you know what you paid to get in. There are people selling it for 10 times as much, and they haven't done it, which is kind of what bothers me about most people in business and a lot of the charlatans you see in the personal development industry and in the business training industry. There are people telling others how to do things when they haven't done it. You know, I don't think you ought to ever go to a broke person to ask them how you ought to get rich. And I don't think you ought to go to somebody who has never written a book to tell you how to write a book. And yet there's sure a lot of that stuff going on. I mean, what gives you the right to do what you do and do your big event and to have this show is you know what you're talking about. You've been there and you've done it and been successful at it. You've earned that right.
Yeah, and that's all I do. I mean, you know, everything I do really it revolves around trucking because that is what I've done. I mean, that's uh-huh. my background, and I've been there, and I've succeeded at it, and I continue to learn about it, share it. And, you know, I've seen those same programs and seminars and books, and you do a little background research, and you find out, like you say, this person's never had a book, never really had a successful business, and yet here they are charging all this money to tell you how to do something that they obviously don't know how to do or they would have done it. They would be out doing that instead of trying to sell a book if they actually knew how. I guess in some ways that's like those people must think they have a giant pair. They're just not real.
Their pair is not based in reality. You see, I think you have to do what you do based on the depth of experience or a depth of knowledge or a depth of research. That's kind of what gives you the right to do what you do. Now, I've been there, done it. You know, I'm an old guy at this point. I've been through a lot. I've been through incredible failure and incredible success, and I learned a lot along the way. I've done a lot of different things. I've been doing this for 23 years now, and I've also read 4,000 books along the way. I've listened to 10,000 hours of audio from some the best minds in the history of our world. I've listened to them. I study constantly what it takes to be successful and how it's kind of changing along the way with just what we were talking about a minute ago with technology and so forth. And so I really do bring to the marketplace experience and knowledge and research. Before I write a book, I read the 100 best-selling books on that topic, so I'll know what's being said, so I won't say it, or so I can agree with it, or I can say that guy was full of crap when he wrote that. But at least I read that stuff, and I know just what you said. You know, you're constantly learning and doing your research and getting more education, and so you can stay up to speed. Anybody that's going to be successful in any business really has to do that. If you're not keeping up by reading and paying attention and going to classes and going to seminars and listening to people who have done it, you're going to fall behind. You cannot just anymore maintain. Things are changing too fast, and there's somebody willing to work harder than you. So you have to get out there and constantly do whatever you can to keep ahead of things.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I think I'm, you know, somewhere over 1,000 books. And every time I'm reading a book and I get a little tired and I'm tempted to put it down, I think, I'm never going to catch Larry if I set this book down. I better read another hour.
Well, you know, some people read books. I read books for intent. What's this person trying to tell me? I also have very low expectations, and everybody says, well, are all the books that you read good books? Oh, my God, no. A lot of them are just crap. I mean, 90% of the books I read are crap. They're not any good. They look good. They got a good title. They got a good cover. But every single book has at least one thing I can learn from it. And so what I do is just I keep saying there's got to be something. And there always is. And what I always do in every one of the books that I read is I write down in the back of the book, and this is back when I read hard copy books instead of on our paper whites like we do now, I would write down what's my one big idea in the back cover there. I'd just write down because I always look for one thing that I'm going to go out and implement as a result of reading the book.
4,000 books, that's a lot of stuff to implement.
I've done a lot of it along the way. Some of it you start and go, it was a dumb idea after all. And some of it you go, man, it's going to take me a lot of years to get this done. But some of those books have been fiction books. But, see, I think you can learn from great fiction, too. Besides that, it gives your mind a rest.
I love to read fiction. It's probably one of my favorite pastimes. So it's a struggle for me when it's time to read. I've always got 10 books on my Kindle that I want to read, and it usually 3 or 4 novels, and then 5 or 6 books that I know I can learn from. And I have to force myself to, when it's time to learn. Read to learn and take notes and be intent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love when I can just relax with a good book and not, have to think.
It's kind of like at school and you get to go to recess. And a good fiction book is like recess.
Yeah.
I just finished one of the best fiction books I've read in a long time. Have you read Gone Girl?
No, I've seen it. I remember looking at it, but I haven't read that. It was
it's going to be made into a movie coming out this next fall, and I'm telling you what, it's a page-turner. It really is. A lot of twists and turns. I enjoyed it.
I will have to load that one up on the Kindle. I just finished one today, and like you said, most books, they're really not that good. I mean, I get excited when I find a really good one anymore, just a good one, because a lot of them are just bad. But like you, it would drive me crazy to put a book down without finishing it. So no matter how bad they are, I read the whole thing anyway. And I'm looking for some ideas, and I usually find something. Mm-hmm. I just finished one today in the truck, and it was interesting. There was some stuff in there that was different than the usual stuff. I think I have to go look up the title. That's the other problem with the technology. The Kindle and having books on my phone is I never see the book. I don't remember titles anymore.
That is a problem. I have sort of a photographic memory, so I need to see that cover.
Yeah, and when I used to see the cover, I would identify more with the book, and I would remember it. I think this one was called something, I'll have to go look it up. Now You're Less Stupid, or something along those lines. Before we wrap it up today, I'll look it up and see what it was. It was about a lot of behavioral kind of stuff, like how we really, deceive ourselves into thinking things are true when they're really not.
Broke, Sick, and Stupid by Randy Gage?
No, I have read that one. That was a good book. This one is more of a psychology almost. I'll get the title. Why don't we get to some phone calls?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Let's go to your home state. Scott in Arizona, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you guys doing? Larry, I have 2 questions for you. The first one's probably real simple. Are they ever going to put your books on CD so I can enjoy them while I'm going down the road? Because when I stop at night, I usually have enough time to eat, shower, and sleep.
A lot of my books are on CD. Penguin Audio released all of my books on CD except for Your Kids Are Your Own Fault. In fact, I just received today 6 sets of Grow a Pair on CD, so I know it's out on CD. So that's a simple question. The answer is they're out there. You're just going to have to look for them. Amazon should have them on CD.
I'll have to have my wife check again. Second question, I, for some reason, come across a lot of single mothers and a very large group of what I feel are irresponsible parents. And what are we going to do to reverse this trend of these people raising their sons to be so sissified and feminine and let them go back to being strong, independent, self-reliant young men who, when they go out into the world and they show up on my doorstep, your doorstep, Kevin's doorstep, wherever, saying, sir, I'd really like to marry your daughter, that when I walk her down the aisle and I give her to this man, I can sleep at night and realize this is a man, he's going to take care of my little girl, not God, not what I see out there now. I mean, it's just
remarkable. I tell you, I totally agree with you on that, Scott. It's going to take a change in our culture. It's not just parents. We've got to fight at a lot of different levels. We need parents standing in front of school boards raising hell saying, you're not taking recess away from us and you're not taking sports away from us. They're just destroying sports in schools these days. And that's where you kind of learn to be a kid, and you learn to get knocked down and get back up. But we've got a cultural problem right now that we don't want our precious little snowflakes to ever get knocked down. We don't want them to get dirty or skinned or bruised or have anything broken. We don't want anybody to be bigger and better than they are. They might get their feelings hurt. And that's really what parents are going to have to fight against. They can do a pretty good job in their own home, but it's a challenge for them to send their kids to school, and that's what happens in the school, to send them into the workplace, and they've got to be coddled in the workplace. And so when we change our culture, and that's going to take a lot of work, that's going to take a lot of parents growing a pair and saying, we're not going to be bullied by school boards that say no sports, no recess, we're going to let our kids be kids. That will go a long way to turning things around.
I hope so, because what I'm finding, too, is I have a friend. She knows I spent 14 years in the Corps. She's got a 17-year-old son going to graduate. He's going no place in life. And I had told her he needs 4 years in the Marines to make. I'm not going to let him go in there. I'm not going to have him turning out like you, where he has this attitude all the time and he can stand up and, you know, I want him to. I still want him to need me, and it's like when he gets married, you're not going to be there.
Yep, and you're going to die, and he's got to learn to stand on his own 2 feet. You know, it's interesting you didn't bring this up, Scott. I posted yesterday my brand new Ask Larry Anything, and it's exactly like this. It's about a woman with an 18-year-old son going no place, and the first thing I said was put him in the service. Pick anything. I think the best thing we could do for our country is require mandatory 2-year hitch. They get to pick it. It would be the best thing in the world for all these kids out there. Since parents aren't teaching discipline, they're not getting in the school system. I know the importance of that. I had an 18-year-old kid that was screwing up and was kind of a mess, and he came to me and said, Dad, I need to go in the Army. And I said, yes, you do. Let's go join right now. And we did, and he came out. He spent 8 years with the 82nd Airborne, and he's the most disciplined, solid human being. I'm totally proud of him, and I credit the Army with doing that for him. I gave him a foundation. The Army really refined it, I'll tell you.
That's amazing. You know, I have real clear memories of, you know, a couple things that happened in my childhood that made an impact. And when I was about 6, I got a motorcycle. Everybody I knew raced motorcycles, and I was small and, you know, 6 years old, but my parents got me one. The very first day, I take off, I go flying down the trail, I crash, skin my leg all up, and I came home crying. And the second I pulled into the garage crying, my dad looked at me and he said, if you ever come home crying again, that'll be the last time you get anything like that. And that was the last time I ever came home crying about anything.
Yep.
Good lesson.
Yep.
Let's go to North Carolina. Kurt, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call, and I look forward to seeing you guys out in St. Louis in a couple weeks or months or whatever it is. I live up in the Northeast, and I don't want to. So I have a... I have a family. I know you guys both live out west. We are considering Colorado or Washington, and doing a lot of thinking about this. The kind of trend seems to take me that way. Here's a little bit of a challenge. I own a business. I also do trucking. It's a real estate, a piece of real estate with a business on it that I also operate. I guess I've been trying to step myself out of it. So this is more of a, it's not an if I should question. It's more like, you guys live out west. Is it that much better? Am I just being foolish about it? how do I go about learning more about it? I'm heading out there in 2 weeks to go play around in your backyard there, Kevin, and or where you live, and just kind of explore and see what's going on. And any of it, I just it's one thing to sit here and think about it. It's a whole different level to say, okay, here's the keys to my house I just sold, and we're heading out.
Well, Kurt, I tell you what, I had to make a move from Oklahoma to Arizona, and what I did, my wife and I came out and rented for a few weeks just to get a feel for the place for a few weeks. And after renting, we had a little better idea about sort of the community and how it felt out here, and we came in the very hottest time in Arizona when it was 118 degrees, so we'd be able to experience it at its worst. And we fell in love with it that way. I think you have to experience a place. It also is all of what's important to you. You got to set your priorities. If it's important for you to move away from the Northeast because it's so cold, that would do it for me. I can't stand the cold weather. Then you're going to have to start just sitting down with your family and figuring out what your priorities are. And if you've got a strong enough reason to do it, you'll figure out how to do it. But I would never move any place till I went out there and experienced it for at least a few weeks, a couple of different times.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm not leaving the Northeast because of the cold. I don't mind that. I'm actually searching out the cold so I can find that white stuff and play in it more.
Well, then you need to go to Colorado then.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the way we're headed. But, you know, my challenge is the operating of the business from afar. And I know there's lots of businesses there's businesses across the entire country. Probably most of them operate without the owner hands in 100% of the time. And I guess that's really my biggest challenge from a density standpoint is why I'm leaving. I want to leave the density of people that is out east.
It's a lot more work to run a business from afar than it is when you're showing up every single day. And the thing is, you've got to have a key person that you trust that you can leave behind that will be in charge while you're gone and trust that person. But believe me, it won't be the same as when you're showing up. It just won't. Businesses fall apart sometimes when people leave. I've been very successful in running a business remotely from another state, and I've had problems running a business remotely from another state. So you're going to have a whole new set of challenges when you do that. So make sure you've done all the work ahead of time so you'll be safe when you do make the decision to move away.
Fantastic. Well, again, I look forward to seeing you guys. Thanks very much.
You bet.
Yeah, and I'll jump in here with just a couple comments. I couldn't agree more with the living in a place and renting. You know, there are so many great vacation rental homes that you can get, you know, in a couple weeks or even a month, and you kind of feel like you're part of the community and you get to know your way around. And many times you'll find that you might like the area, but you'll really be able to dial in a neighborhood or a part of town that you want to be in if you spend some time there. I've moved several times. I left the Northeast for the same reason. I didn't like much of anything in Ohio. And I've moved the business many times from Ohio to Jacksonville, Florida, from Jacksonville to Orlando, from Orlando to Denver, from Denver back to Daytona Beach, from Daytona Beach onto the road for 2.5 years in an RV, and now in Oregon. Running the business, when I left the business in Orlando, I ran it, I guess it was about 2.5 or 3 years, and then just decided it was too much work and too much stress to run it from afar. I really didn't enjoy running a business being away from it like that, so I sold it. Let's go to Indiana. Jeff Zarley, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me on, gentlemen. Larry, I absolutely love your material, read all your books many a times, and appreciate the opportunity to ask you a question today. We all know most successful people are very, very busy. At least they say they are. And my question to you, Larry, is how to set boundaries and time. What happens with me is I work a pretty physically and mentally demanding day job. In the evenings, I spend another multiple hours working on a second career path, small business thing. And what happens, Larry, is I have my long-term goals, what I want to set, but every spare minute of my breathing life is taken by something, and I can't tell people no. And I have trouble focusing on who to tell no and when to actually stop doing one thing and start with the other to achieve my long-term goals, if that makes sense. I'm putting everybody off to the last minute. And it's kind of an...
And I can hear in your voice how frustrating that is for you. And yet you're like a whole lot of people. You've got these big goals, and you're sacrificing the short term in pursuit of the long term. And all that's going to do is make you frustrated and miserable, and you'll die early. And that's no way to live your life. It's just not. You've got to... How much of your goals do you really have written down? So they're very, very specific.
Okay, specific written goals I have divided into four segments. I actually use an app called Smart Goals. It's an iPhone app. But I have financial, spiritual, family, and career, those four goals. And
it sounds to me like, and that's exactly what I would suggest to you, but it sounds to me like the career is kind of overloading it. You know, it's an old exercise that we used to put people through way back in the early days of self-help and personal development. And there's really kind of seven areas of life. You've got yours into four. But if you thought about those areas as spokes of a wheel and you were rolling that wheel along, where would it go flat? I'm betting it'd go flat for you. You'd have a real peak in terms of career because you're working all the time. And it'd go flat for you probably over in the family area because you're not setting aside enough time. Is that correct?
You read my mind, sir.
Yeah. That's typically what happens. And the people who suffer the most while we're in pursuit of our long-term goals are our family. And frankly, that's not fair to them. You've got to make family a priority. You know, it's not going to do you any good to be rich and dead or rich and divorced or rich and a lousy parent because you achieved your long-term goals, but you lost your family or sacrificed those sacred times with them along the way. It's just not the right thing to do. So you've got to look for some sort of balance. You achieve life balance based on priorities. It's not about time management. It's not about goal management. Again, everything goes to what's important to you. Your time, your energy, and your money go to what's important to you. So you can track your time, and that's what I suggest you do. You start tracking your time on a 15-minute basis, and you do it for a week. Get you a sheet of paper, write down whatever it is time you get up, 6 o'clock to 6:15, 6:15 to 6:30, 6:30 to 6:45. Do it until 10 o'clock at night. And you track your time for no more than 4 or 5 days. 4 or 5 days. And that will determine what your priorities are. And I bet you're spending way too much time on your long-term goals and not near enough time on what's really important to you in your heart, and that would be probably your spiritual area and your family area.
That is correct. I love the idea. It's almost like budgeting, like we do budgeting financially. Just maybe I could work that into budgeting my time eventually and just saying, nope, I'm drawing a boundary here. And,
you know, there's no more powerful thing in the world for you to do than to say no. And I promise you, you can say no to about half the stuff that's pulling you different directions, and you will still reach your goals, and you will still be able to spend more time with your family. Just say no. I promise you that's a powerful thing. You know, I've got a huge section in my book, Grow a Pair, about learning to say no. I say no to almost everything. I don't eat with people I don't enjoy. I don't go places I don't enjoy. I am the most selfish, hedonistic person in the world. If it doesn't make me happy and my wife and I happy, we don't do it. I don't live my life for others. My priorities are very, very clear. And so it's just it's a real empowering thing for you to get to the point that you say, no, that's not on my plan. Thank you so much for asking. I choose not to do that. And that's what you're going to have to do. This was a great question, and it helped a lot of people. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Larry, and thank you for the Grow a Pair T-shirt. My daughter was the little girl with the John Deere shirt and the two pumpkins that last Halloween.
Oh, there you go.
You.
I remember.
Yep, I knew you would. Thank you so much. I appreciate
you
that.
You bet.
Hey, Jeff, I want to second that because I was really, really bad at saying no at one point. And I think my fear at the time was every time somebody asked me to do something, I looked at it as an opportunity. And I felt like if I keep passing up opportunities, you know, maybe another one won't come along. And nothing could have been farther from the truth. I mean, and I know you. I know how confident you are. I know how much heart and effort you put into everything you do. You're never going to run out of opportunities. So saying no and letting them go by, there's going to be 10 more right behind it.
Well, I appreciate that advice, and thank you for the opportunity. Outstanding podcast here.
Thanks. And it really was liberating when I started doing the same thing, saying no in a lot of ways, business, personal, phone calls, whatever. It's a better way to live.
Absolutely.
It is. Let's go to Utah. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing this evening?
Good. What's on your mind tonight?
I'm glad to have the opportunity tonight to talk with Larry here. My wife and I, we're looking at starting another trucking company. We had one truck before, had to sell it back in 09 when everything kind of took a dump. And last time we got into it, we got real lucky. We fell into a good company. It was hauling fuel, so we had plenty of freight hauling fuel to the oil companies. This go around, we're thinking about going with Landstar, which I know to be successful there, you've got to do more than just look at the load board. You've got to interact with the agents and be proactive with the agents there to make yourself successful. What would be a good book of Larry's I could get a hold of to start with? I haven't read any of his stuff yet.
Well, if you want the book that's a little more businessy and it might help you in those terms, I'd go for the book called It's Called Work for a Reason. If you just want a good basic starter, Larry Wingett book, I would start with my first book, and it's still my biggest seller, which would be Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life.
Okay.
And it touches on a lot of different things.
Okay. Okay.
Both of those would really be good. And Larry, by the way, I absolutely love It's Called Work for a Reason. It's hard for me to pick a favorite out of your books, but I think if I had to, that would be my favorite.
Well, I'll agree with you on that. That's my favorite. My Your Kids Are Your Own Fault book is my favorite book, because I consider that to be the most important subject in the world right now is good parenting. But the book that really floated my boat when I wrote it was this business book. It's called Work for a Reason. There's something in that book for everybody.
There is. There are really, really good stuff, too. That one is my favorite. So, Anthony, one of the things and I've said it many times, to be successful in Landstar system, it really is about building relationships. But the other thing you want to do is you want to focus on just a couple in the beginning. You know, pick a couple areas of the country that you want to run, maybe a triangle somewhere, and find two or three agents and take the time to go see them. Take the time to go meet them. Very few contractors ever bother to do that. Take the time to go meet them in person, sit down and talk to them about what your goals are. But before you do that, talk to them about what you bring to the table that's going to help them.
Right. I mean, I know that if you don't do that, if you don't sit down and say, this is what I can do for you, they're not going to want to give you the good freight and the good freight that will get you home. And I've known that with a few other companies I've had, that if you don't get in good, and it's been dispatchers in the past, but if you don't get in good with them, they're not going to treat you well. But I want to comment on the last caller. I really appreciate Jeff calling in. That's been my biggest worry, is spending more time away from the family, but how to keep family relationships together, even though I'm going to be gone a little bit more than I am right now. So that was a big help for me, and I'll take a look at those books.
All right, thanks.
One more thing, Anthony. Here's something to think about. Landstar has about 10,000 contractors, roughly, give or take, the last time I looked. 9,500 of them never even have the thought about building relationships. So already you've put yourself in the top percentage, because before you even go over there, you've already got that plan. So you're going to do great over there.
Well, I appreciate that, and I was talking with one of them. He come out of Oklahoma up to Vernal, Utah, and he decided to deadhead home from Vernal, Utah to Texas. And I'm like, why don't you just grab something on the way back? No, I'm just headed back. I'm like, well, if this is my competition, then I think I can do all right.
Yeah, you know, it's a great company, and they have a great group of contractors. They really do. But it's just like the general population. 95% of the people just aren't trying that hard or doing that much. And it's the same way over there.
Well, I know this is a little bit off topic, Kevin, but what do you see? And I've noticed you endorse Mercer. You brought Mercer on as a sponsor, and I've talked to Shelby over there, Corum, and very nice lady, and it seems like a very good outfit. I'm choosing Landstar because it's going to keep me out west. I live in Utah, but what do you see in Mercer that makes you want to bring them on as a sponsor?
You know, and we only have two carriers. Really, we only have one carrier as a sponsor. We do a lot of projects with Landstar. They're not really a sponsor, but I've been working with them for decades now. Mercer, there's the big difference, really. Mercer feels a lot like a family. I mean, that
family.
Is a very – they've got a great culture over there to work in, great work environment. And you don't kind of have quite as much freedom to do your own thing as you do at Landstar, but you still have more freedom than you do being contracted to a lot of places. And they're just a great company. It's a great reputation. You can look at their turnover rate and see. You know, one thing that stood out for me, and this goes back to when we actually went to them and started working with them as a partner company. Remember when the economy tanked, and there were actually carriers getting rid of owner-operators, which was almost unheard of in the 20-some years I've been doing this.
But Mercer decided
as a company not to let everybody suffer because there wasn't enough freight. They cut back on their contractors, and they didn't take the easy way out and do it like a lot of companies do and just say, okay, you know, the last 50 contractors we signed on, you're gone because we need more freight to spread around. They actually did it on merit. They got rid of contractors that had been there 10 and 12 and 15 years because they weren't performing. And I respected them for that.
Well, you got to do something like that to stay alive. And I really respect Mercer and those guys over there. I just keep thinking with Landstar, I see they have more freight out west.
So it's
going to keep me closer to home, which is like, and I have to agree with Larry, that family is my number one goal. And spending time and being able to get home and spend time with them is, like you said, there ain't no use of being rich if you're going to be divorced.
Yeah.
And
Yep, and in your case, definitely, living in Utah, you're going to do better with Landstar. You're going to get home a lot more often than you would with Mercer. With Mercer, you're going to spend a lot of time on the East Coast. Let's go to Utah. Karen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, guys. Larry and Kevin, I just want to tell you both thank you. You guys helped me grow a pair, and I was able to get rid of our one set of dispatchers and go in and list why I was going to be good for our new dispatcher, and I've had the best relationship for 6 months now with the new dispatcher because of your book, Larry.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. Thanks.
And Jeff Scarsley, I know you're still listening. You're awesome, and I'm glad you never tell me no. And I appreciate all your help. And, Kevin, I
anything
appreciate
anything else, Karen?
Your...
Do you have any? Well, you're welcome. Do you have any questions?
How is it, I guess, when you're dealing with a boss, okay, it was easy to grow a pair with a dispatcher, okay, but with a boss, it's harder to do. When he wants us to do some off-the-wall stuff that just makes no sense, I don't know how to handle that at times. And I know to quit being the victim. I'm not the victim anymore. I just need to know how to deal with him better.
You know, a good conversation can solve a lot of things. Say, boss, I know you want us to do this, and, man, we're willing to do whatever you tell us to do. I want you to help me because I'm not finding this makes a lot of sense to me. Please explain to me why we're doing it this way or what we're doing, or and just approach it with a good, calm conversation. First of all, state your total willingness to do it, whether it makes sense to you or not. State your willingness to do it, but that you need help. Ask him to help you. A good boss is always willing to help you understand. And ask him to help you understand why this needs to be done or done in that way or whatever. The other thing you can always do is document. If you've been asked to do the same stupid thing over and over and over again, document what the results are. Facts speak a whole lot louder than your emotions about how you feel about something you've been asked to do when you can actually prove to them based on results what happened. So if you've got the ability to track it, what the results were as a result of you, what you've been asked to do, then do that and go in with the documentation.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a
you
great
bet.
Evening.
All right. Thanks. Let's head off to Florida. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I kind of got a strange question here. When you're talking on a personal level, I got family members that might be listening. So when you have a family member that you know needs a kick in the butt and, you know, he's just doesn't get up and do what he should do and chooses to be lazy, how far do you push it to keep nudging him along where it's to the point where you're being a pain in his ass and he doesn't appreciate it?
Well, I'll tell you what, you have to remember this, and most of the questions I get are about a family member. I get hundreds and hundreds of emails and questions every single month with people wanting advice. And I would say 90% of them are about a family member. And my answer is always the same. People change when they want to, not when you want them to. And you may see how he needs to change or she needs to change. It may be totally obvious to you, but they're never going to change until they want to, regardless of how much you push them or nudge them or nag them or put a boot in their butt or whatever. They're not going to change until they want to change. And people never change until they really don't have a choice. And sadly, some people got to get to that point that there's no other choice. They've got to get better or die. That's how it works for some folks. That's just how they're wired. And you're not going to be able to save them just because you know they need to be saved. They've got to feel the pain of their stupid decisions. Let them feel the pain. Tell them, encourage them, show them how, be there for them, and then step out of the way and let them feel the pain of their decisions.
Yeah. Well, it's just extremely frustrating when they do actually ask sometimes, and you give them, you know, one or two options of what a couple ways to handle the situation the best, and then they go do the exact opposite.
Yep. So. Well, that's kind of what relatives are about sometimes.
Yeah.
We've all got them, believe me. You didn't corner the market on stupid relatives.
Yeah, okay. I got a, more of just a comment here than a question, talking about financial stuff. I kind of had some expenses last year that wiped out all my savings, and now the first of the year here in the business, I've spent a little bit more than I guess I was paying attention to and ran up a little bit of debt. So what does a guy do in a situation like that? I've spent the last 3 weeks working straight solid through where normally I work every other week.
Well, there's only two ways to have more money. Increase income or decrease expenses, and you really ought to do both. So
yep.
It means you got to alter your lifestyle, and you got to do whatever you can to bring in more money to pay down the debt. And the worst kind of debt in the world is credit card debt because it carries the highest percentage of interest. So it sounds to me like you're doing your doing what's right there and doing your best to get it back in alignment. So good for you.
Yeah. I just want to thank you for all your books. I've read all of them. And just like Jeff there, I was sent in a photo for your Grow a Pair contest and won one of the T-shirts.
Oh, cool. I appreciate that.
My son was the one with the two pairs of feet.
Oh, I remember. There you go. Well, I appreciate that.
All righty.
All right, good stuff. Let's go to, what's with Utah today? Is everybody in Utah? Dale, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hey, Larry, how's it going?
Great.
Hey, I'm in kind of a unique situation that maybe I just need to be kicked in the butt, but we got, my town was decimated last year in a flood, and I've been homeless since June, and living at the fire hall. My wife's a firefighter. And how do you maintain that positive outlook on life when you're dealing with the stupidity of government while they figure out whether they're going to buy me out or fix my house or do all of this while I'm still making a mortgage payment on a piece of property I can't live in? Any suggestions?
I tell you what, first of all, I'm sorry. That's a horrible hell of a situation to be in, and I can't imagine it. I really can't. So I'm sorry. As far as keeping a positive outlook when you're dealing with the government, listen, it's the government. And it's hard for anybody to keep a positive outlook right now with the government. It's really going to be a challenge for you to deal with that, and I know it is. The best you can do is remind yourself, and I do this every single day, it could always be worse. And that may be all that you can go to some days, is that it could always be worse. Think about what you really could have lost there. Was your family all right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my,
well, then
my
that's,
meals
but
are
that's
safe
all
and...
that matters. You know, a house is just stuff. And while it's not fair and it's not right what's happening to you probably with the government getting you paid back and all that sort of stuff, it's just the way it is. But you still got your family and everybody's alive and you're making it through it. And I tell you what, just pat yourself on the back and know it could have been a whole lot worse. And eventually, I mean, it'll get done. It's just government moves like molasses in wintertime.
Well, I'm retired highway patrol, and I get all of that, but, Lord, it's just drive you crazy.
I bet it is.
Well,
you're laughing, and sometimes that's all you can do right there.
Well, thanks, Larry. You bet. Right again.
Hey, Larry, we're going to get probably maybe one more call in here before we've got to wrap up the hour. But
okay.
With all this stuff you've going on, you've got books, you've got your new virtual training, you've always got something going on. What's the best way for somebody to find you? Just to go right to your website?
You know, the website's always the easiest place to find out what's going on with me. And then if you want to take a tangent and follow me over on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter, any of that stuff, it'll tell you how to do that. Just go to LarryWingate.com. You can order most of the books there, and they come to you autographed. A couple of the new ones you can't get through me yet because the publisher still is selling them. But, you know, just go to LarryWinkett.com. You'll find out more than you'd ever want to know about Larry Winkett. You can watch the videos. It'll lead you. There's a video vault there, which carries all of the YouTube videos that we put out. And you can go to YouTube and watch those Ask Larry Anything, too. So I'd go to the website.
Yeah, you know, the Ask Larry Anything is a great place to start. If somebody isn't familiar with your stuff, it's a great quick hit, some good ideas. And you once you watch a couple of them, you'll just be hooked, and you watch the rest of them, and then you go buy a bunch of books. So they're really good. Hey, you know, I'm looking at the clock here. We're going to wrap this up. We will be seeing you here, boy, sooner than I thought, coming up the beginning.
I know, this time has flown by this time, hasn't it?
Yeah, hard to believe we'll be back together in just a couple months.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. There's no event that I do all year long where I have any more fun than doing yours. I really do enjoy it that much. I'm committed for as long as you want me. And I look forward to doing it again this year.
Well, I certainly appreciate you saying that. With all the stuff you do and all the travel and all the cool things, it's nice to know that we rank up there.
Well, you do for sure, and I appreciate you having me on. I've had a great time. Been good questions tonight.
Well, if you'll come back, we'd love to have you back again.
You just give me a shout. We'll do it.
We'll do. All right, we're gonna wrap this up. Larry, thanks again, and we will talk to you soon. All right, everybody, we're gonna wrap this up. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you on the live show tonight. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work. And master the journey. Maybe we should throw in there, and if you haven't already, grow a pair too. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Tuning in to the Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.